Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. Today, from his offices in Berkeley, California, we have with us a man whose name has been in the California political headlines for nearly three decades. The first elected official to champion traffic calming in the state of California, long before it was an accepted way to preserve the character of neighborhoods, Tom Bates, as you will soon hear, is also one of the only unpaid mayors in all of the United States. So, Tom, how are you doing today, guy?
I'm fine, thanks.
All right. So, one of the things I've got to know before I get too far into all of this, how long have you been the mayor of Berkeley?
Well, not quite 3 years.
3 years.
I'm approaching 3 years, but you know, I've had an extensive background in public service, elected public service. I had the opportunity to represent the Berkeley, Oakland area in the state legislature for actually 20 years and was term limited out in 1996. And prior to that, I was a county supervisor from 72 to 76. So I've actually been in public office for quite a long time.
Okay, now I've got to know, going back to the 60s, were you in Berkeley there, living in Berkeley during the 60s?
I actually I went to UC Berkeley and went to Cal from 56 to, you know, started late 56 to 61. I was on the football team, the Cal Rose Bowl team.
Really? Yeah. Really? Wow.
Yeah, I was a starter on the Cal Rose Bowl team.
What position did you play?
I played tight end.
Really?
These were the days when you played all different ways.
Uh-huh.
Offense, defense, special teams, kickoffs, extra points. You,
uh-huh.
You could only substitute by a team.
Wow.
So I played a lot.
You were a tight end.
I came to Berkeley then and loved the area.
Uh-huh.
I then went in the Army. I was in the ROTC and was an officer in the Army.
Uh-huh.
And I came back and I ended up living in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And then I ended up getting married to Lonnie Hancock, who ran for mayor of Berkeley and was elected and so in 1986.
Wow.
I moved here in 1986, back to Berkeley.
Wow. So during the turbulence of the 60s, when Mario Savio and all those guys were going crazy, as it were, up in Berkeley, what were you doing then?
Well, that was actually a time when I was in 64 when I got back. I was, of course, out of school and stuff, and out of the Army. And I was working at that time in Oakland, and I was really just an observer, like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved in politics at that point in my life, but I was unlike my wife, Lonnie Hancock, who was very much involved with the anti-war movement and led the first women's march against the war in Vietnam and was actively involved. I was actively involved in anti-war, but it was really from a sort of an Oakland perspective, not at the heart of the, mm-hmm. of the storm in Berkeley.
The belly of the beast. Berkeley was right. It was like that was pretty much, what's the word I'm looking for? The center of things where the anti-war movement was concerned.
Well, it really was. You know, they
ground central.
Actually involved with, you know, trying to stop troop trains. They were having demonstrations going down to the induction center. You know, people were really, really into it. And then after that came the civil rights movement, the free speech movement. I mean, it's been a hub of interesting, innovative ideas coming out of Berkeley for years.
So what were you doing for work at this time when all this stuff was going on?
Well, at this time, I was actually, in 1964, I worked for a small real estate company doing commercial real estate. They had an office in San Francisco, one in Oakland, and they just opened an office in Sacramento. And they wanted me to be part of their future and grow with them. And I thought, well, this is not for me. I wasn't interested in doing real estate. And the company was a Coldwell Banker and Company.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And this is now all over the world.
Wow.
But I was a sold commercial and industrial real estate for a couple of years. And then I went to work with a friend of mine and did real estate development for a couple of years. And then I got into politics and put my real estate license, I was a broker, on ice and never used it again. And have been employed in one way or another from public service from 1972 to, well, actually 71 to all the way to 96. And now in Samara Berkeley, I serve without pay. I don't get paid because I do have a pension from the state legislature, and I'm not entitled under state law to get the compensation paid for by the city. So
really?
I'm the number one volunteer of the city of Berkeley.
Wow.
Yeah.
So are you a full-time mayor then?
Yes, I am. More than a full-time.
Well, yeah. That even when it's a half-time mayor, it's usually you work full-time and then some.
Oh, yeah.
But the position calls for full-time?
The position doesn't call for full-time.
Yeah.
We have a council, city manager form of government, so we theoretically set the policy and the manager enacts the policy. But as a practical matter, this is more than a full-time job. One of the past mayors used to, say that it was ridiculous that anybody could do this job half-time and all this. When she got elected, found out it was not the case, and ended up working full-time herself.
Wow. Well, let's talk about your alma mater for a second here, Cal.
Sure.
I want to kind of maybe do a little bit of a fast-forward and a backtrack or whatever. It's going to position this correctly in the dialogue of things here. Now, traffic calming. Were you one of the pioneers, if not the first person to bring that into like a city structure?
Well, my first effort in that area was in the late 70s, the Supreme Court, Roseburg Court, Jerry Brown appointed Roseburg to be the Chief Justice. They ruled that the traffic diverters in Berkeley, what some people call them diverters, other people call them barriers, right, depending upon your point of view,
right,
were determined by the Supreme Court to be unconstitutional, and they were not properly enacted into law.
Wow.
So I was a legislator at that time, and I carried a bill that legalized all sorts of obstructions in the roadway. When I first put in the bill, it affected Berkeley, but it also affected every city in the state. But there was a lot of people who have a sort of anti-Berkeley bias. When anything, they say, "Oh, that's just Berkeley, and we don't want to do anything to help them per se." But I was able to demonstrate that with the League of Cities that this was a problem not just for Berkeley, but it was a problem for everyone all over California. Because if you had a bulb out, as an example, or let's say you had a tree in the middle of the street, that would have been deemed under this ruling of the court as being an obstruction and would not be legal. So I ended up, garnering enough support by showing people this was more than a Berkeley problem. And so that was my first venture into helping with traffic calming. You can imagine at that point, some people hated having these diverters because, they're winners and losers. People who have a diverter at their street so cars don't go through the street are rerouted onto another street,
right,
which means that street has double the transportation, double the traffic. So it was a hard issue, but I should point out to you that the city of Berkeley citizens who opposed it actually put it on the ballot for to change it on two different occasions, and they were both defeated. So people, once it was in place, actually liked it, at least a sufficient number to keep it in place. But it was a controversial issue. But traffic diverters have played a very important role in Berkeley because Berkeley is laid out in a grid pattern, where you have parallel streets and perpendicular streets running in a straight line, particularly in the flat, not in the hills. And people, myself included, when I was a student, used to just, go right through the neighborhoods, driving and not particularly taking any one street, but going through all kinds of streets like Regent or Wheeler and going right by neighborhoods at a rather rapid speed. So that was my first venture into since then I've become a total convert. We're lucky in Berkeley because it's estimated now that over 15% of the people either walk to work or ride bicycles to work.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing.
That's fantastic. I say that because I'm astounded. The report you have on file with us here is 5.6%, but there again I see that it is work trips.
Yeah. And we now have bicycle boulevards that are designated specifically for bicycle treatment, so rather than streets that are, they're marked directing bicyclists in different routes, which we continue to improve upon and work on. we have a wonderful new structure that took place in an administration that happened before my administration, where they built a bicycle pedestrian bridge over the Interstate 80, which
right,
is a
right.
beautiful
yes.
facility that's just marvelous. And we do things like we have a pedestrian walking plan, and we're now going to update that plan, a pedestrian plan. But traffic calming is a big issue here, because we really, you know, we've done things like the diverters. We have traffic humps, bulb outs, traffic circles. I mean, we're trying to do everything we can to get people to drive
slow down.
Comfortably.
The slow yeah. down. Now, you got involved with this. You're saying in the late 70s, then.
Uh huh.
Okay, that was as an assemblyman. Was that your correct designation there in Sacramento?
Assemblyman?
You were an assemblyman. Is that what you were called back then?
Yeah, that's what I was called.
Okay, so you were in.
It was a good title for me, because one of the things I found out was that one of my skills was working with people and taking some of their ideas and concerns and taking them and bringing them to the government and being able to implement those concerns. So it's like putting together the pieces. So it's like an assemblyman, right? Somebody
uh-huh.
would make things happen.
All yeah. right, all right.
I had a great story about that too. One time I went down to the NUMMI plant down in
Fremont,
uh-huh. and I got there and I said, I introduced myself to the guard and I said, I'm an assemblyman Tom Bates, and the guy said, well, you go down to that other gate.
Oh no!
I explained that I didn't actually put together parts on a car.
That's classic. That's a great joke. Now Berkeley had, I remember back in the '60s, if I remember correctly, they had traffic diverters already in place. Would that be correct?
They came in the '60s.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to think. Well, let me verify this. I actually think they came in the '70s, the early '70s.
Oh, really?
But I'm not positive about that. But I think they came in the '70s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but they were unpopular when they came in, or how were they initially, just in Berkeley, before you got your work going with the assembly?
You can imagine if you have a street where, like, let's just say you live on a street where you the traffic has been diverted to off of the other streets, suddenly the traffic counts would go from a small amount, and they would double, triple, quadruple. And people, you know, to get to the campus coming from the south, coming from Oakland, there were a whole series of roads that you could take, streets that you could take that would take you towards the campus. And you could approximately five or six streets that you could use to get to the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And those were just basically speedways for people to get into the campus. So suddenly when you have diverters in place where you can't get through, people are then forced to go to the main streets. And as a consequence, the traffic, you know, went way up on those streets that don't have diverters, that have clear flow. Like Dwight Way is a perfect example. It's a residential street, designed as a residential street, but it goes from the bay up towards the campus, and it is one of the few streets that you can go unobstructed all the way up from 6th Street, which is down the lower part of Berkeley, up to Shattuck and the campus. You can go all the way on that street, and as a consequence, that street has 8,000 cars or so go by there, and it is if you live there, suddenly you have traffic all the time, night and day. And on the other streets, the other 10 streets or so that you can't get through, you have more livable neighborhoods
uh-huh.
where people don't have to worry about the cars zooming through their streets.
Okay, now where I wanted to originally build Cal into this conversation was Cal, this obviously affects them, and because they're the recipient of all this traffic. They're the ones that, so essentially what you're doing by building traffic diversion into your city is you are kind of limiting the access to the campus, as it were. Do you have problems with Cal? Do they work with you on this? Was there a big, huge wall they threw up against this when it first came up back in the '70s, early '70s?
You know, I wasn't exactly in the eye of the storm then, but because I was really came in to sort of save what had taken place. But it was my understanding that I don't believe they were actively engaged in the debate. I mean, they figured that that people would get to the campus, and you know there are access points to the campus, and those are you know it's not like people couldn't get to the campus. It was just that they were rerouted to funnel them to various streets. I don't think they were. I don't believe in my memory that they were actively opposing what was taking place.
Okay, well, if they're all like in Santa Cruz where I lived for 20 years, if they're all like the UC down there, that's the beast you've got in your neighborhood. You're probably always fighting with them about things they want to do that are going to introduce more traffic to your city. Is that the case? Am I correct in that assumption?
That is the case. We have an ongoing discussion with them because what happens with our campus, which is probably similar to what happens in Santa Cruz and other university campuses, is that we have a tremendous influx of people that come to the campus every day. Mm-hmm. And parking is a big issue. I mean, getting to the campus and parking and just the whole pollution, global warming, climate change arguments are clearly front and center. Now, we are fortunate that we do have a BART station that's very close to the campus, so people can take BART. And it's the busiest BART station in the East Bay, and I understand it's one or two, it's like number two or three in the system as far as busy activity goes. So we have tons of students
Great.
That go back and forth and other people visiting the campus. We also have a situation where the campus now has the students have now voted to tax themselves to provide every student with a free bus pass. So the bus service is one of the things that is really being fully utilized by the students.
Great.
So that's helped a lot, people coming in on public transportation. But parking and the faculty want to have their own parking spaces. And it's a situation where it's a premium. They pay a lot of money for the spaces, but there's tremendous demand from the faculty saying we want more parking spaces, and a pushback from the city saying, wait a minute, let's get public transportation. Let's bring this free pass that we have for the students. Let's bring that to the staff and to the professors. And they have taken that step recently, but they have to pay a fee, so it hasn't been as anywhere near as successful as the student one. But it's an ongoing struggle that we have car traffic in and out of the city and parking that the university wants to provide for its employees and for its professors.
So, Tom, does the city work with you? Are they responsive? Are they flexible? Do they honor your needs?
Well, we had a situation with the university where they came up with a long range development plan showing what they were going to be doing in the future with the campus and the growth that they were projecting.
Uh-huh.
And the student increase was actually minimal. They said they were going to add roughly about 4,000 students. But over the course of the last few years, they've basically increased the amount of students to that just about that amount already. So it's not like it's a major impact on us. But they wanted to do more research, and so as a consequence, they need more land, and they've identified a need of 2.1 million square feet of additional office space and campus space.
Oh, my God.
Which, if you look at that, that's huge. That's
gigantic.
Yeah, it's larger than the Empire State Building, to put it in perspective.
Wow.
But we ended up having a dispute with them about the parking, number of parking spaces, and we ended up suing the Board of Regents, the city did, and then we entered into negotiations around the lawsuit and came up with what a really good plan, I think, which is the University of California, and this would apply to all the campuses, are by the Constitution, are immune from all local rules and regulations and laws.
Right.
So they can do whatever they want.
Right.
So what we did was we agreed to plan together where their thoughts were for additional building opportunities for them and where those sites might be and how they would integrate with our city, how it would work with our traffic, what sort of parking would be provided, looking at issues around design and shadowing. So they have agreed to all that. And so for the first time, we actually, instead of fighting one another, hopefully we're going to be working together to plan with one another.
Now, is this just the Cal Berkeley campus, or is this all University of California?
This is just the Cal Berkeley campus.
Okay, you're lucky. Yeah. You're lucky, because I know it's like in Santa Cruz, they are autonomous. The university down there does almost what it wants to do.
Well, our university can, you know, but I think we have enlightened leadership now. We have a really good chancellor. Chancellor Robert Bergeneau is new and going to be here about a year, and he understands that you have to have a healthy community and a healthy campus to go hand in hand. And the problems of the city don't end at the campus boundary. That they, you know, so they need to work together with us to plan and deal with these problems in a realistic way.
Well, you know, Bruce, I live here in Palo Alto, and Stanford has just this incredible bicycle camp, and it's amazing how you almost feel like you're in Beijing, China at certain times of the day. There are so many bikes on the paths. Is that Berkeley kind of used to be that way? Is it still that way? You went to school there.
It still is pretty much. You know, we have we do everything we can to make it bicycle friendly, and so we certainly encourage people to use bikes, and we have bike racks, and it's pretty heavily utilized. I think the problem is one of which people have to realize: transportation. They've got to start thinking about transportation in a different way. It's not like you just jump in your car and go someplace. Mm-hmm. You have to start figuring out, what are the alternatives I can do? Can I walk to work, which is not only a good thing for the environment, but it's also physically a good thing for people to do. Get out and get some exercise and move their body. Mm-hmm. Can they take BART and then walk? Or can they take their bike and bike to BART and then take BART to another location? Or take your bike to the bus system, you know, and connect up, or walk, but to think about a plan, it's a transportation plan. And more people are understanding that cars are extremely expensive. Most people don't realize this, but if you look at the car and you realize the purchase of the car, the cost of the overhead of the car, it is, you know, it ranges from anywhere from $300 to $400 a month. Well, if you have that extra $300 or $400 a month, that's a big difference in terms of your lifestyle. Yeah. You can eat out occasionally.
Yes.
You can save money. Maybe you can own a home, you know, putting that towards the mortgage, something like
that. Right. Wow.
We got to have people realize, you know, and Berkeley has, people are purchasing the hybrid electric vehicles. And more hybrid electric vehicles are sold in Berkeley than any place in North America.
Really?
We are, yeah.
Wow.
It used to be a 6 months waiting list. I don't know if it's down, but people are buying, you know, people realize that the gas prices, the fact that they want to do something to clean up their environment, and they want to get out of the car, has made a big difference.
Can you state that fact?
Think of cleaner ways to go.
Can you state that fact one more time? You're saying that Berkeley has more electric vehicles, like Priuses, I guess, than...
Honda has but they sell more Priuses in Berkeley than any place in North America.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a red hot car.
Now, let's come back to cycling for just a second, then I'm going to wrap this stuff up because I know you got a billion things to do there.
Yeah, I actually have to go to the campus right now.
Are you?
I walk out there.
Do you ever ride up to campus?
Well, you know, I live fairly close to my office, and whenever I can, I walk when I don't need a car. And then what we've done now is we now have a city car share where I can get a car that's a Prius on city business and use that car to go wherever I need to go. So now I don't need you to use my car at all.
Well, how much biking are you doing, Tom?
We cycle quite a bit.
Yeah.
My wife and I, but it's mostly recreational.
Uh-huh. And do you ride the Berkeley Hills?
No.
No?
Lonnie and I are more interested in flat.
All right. So you're saying...
I'm going to have to run up to the campus.
Great.
So it's nice to talk to you.
Tom, great. Thanks for the time you spent with us today. This is very... I feel honored, and I'm excited for what you're doing out there.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it very much.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much. For more information about the city of Berkeley, see the bike and report card we have up for them at bikeroute.com. Berkeley, long a transcending population center can be seen at ci.berkeley.ca.us. That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG Director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.